Hello and welcome to the Covenant of Mayors podcast. Today I'm speaking to Sasha Heath-Drugovich, head of the European Affairs Office of the Municipality of Celje, but also the president of the Committee for European Cohesion Policy and International Cooperation at the Association of Municipalities of Slovenia and president of the Expert Committee for Integrated Territorial Investment at the Intermediate Body Association of Urban Municipalities of Slovenia.
In part one of this podcast, we'll discuss the effects of climate change in Sasha's city and how Celje is engaging with European Cohesion Policy and the Covenant of Mayors to boost nature-based solutions for tracking extreme heat and flooding. In part two, we'll get into how cities are cooperating nationally and internationally to put together new projects and secure change, the power of European funding to transform a city, and the challenge of balancing modern needs with a wealth of cultural heritage.
Sasha, thanks so much for joining us.
Pleasure. Thanks very much for inviting me.
So, you're the head of European Affairs in Celje.
I'm just an engineer. I have quite a funny CV, actually. I have master's in engineering in materials. I studied in Ljubljana. I did my thesis in Germany. So Germans have taught me engineering. After that, I moved to NZ, where I worked as a consultant. I did some postgrad studies in Auckland, and that was management. And I was taught American management. So I have quite a lethal combination of German engineering with American management. Then I also worked as a director of a managing company. And now I'm in public service working on EU funding.
It's definitely an unusual trajectory, but it makes you sound quite formidable.
And I guess it gives me a sort of an advantage, I guess, or disadvantage for people who work around me because I'm using non-standard methods for the environment.
Interesting. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing about those methods. But first, please tell me a bit about Celje.
Celje is smallish town, under 50,000 inhabitants. We have an extremely rich history heading back to Roman times. We had middle-aged European nobility, the Celje Counts. One of the daughters of Celje Counts was Barbara of Cili, who was a Holy Roman Empress and Queen of Hungary and Bohemia in 14th and 15th century. In more recent past, Celje was an industrial city. These days, we are a regional center, a center for education, health, and so on.
So you're shifting now from an industrial to a post-industrial economy. Is that a process that you're still in the middle of, or is it one that you're coming at the far side of at the moment?
Yeah, far side of it. We are still dealing with brownfield, and that's going to be something to work on in the coming decades. But yes, the change of the big industrial city and big industry, this is the past for us and has been for three decades.
And just for our listeners, could you explain this term brownfield land and what your notions are for moving forward with it?
Brownfield is the area which was contaminated by heavy industry in the past, which means that soils are polluted and normally with heavy metals. There is also a threat of washing out chemicals into the water and so on. So this is a very common problem throughout all the countries that went through industrial revolution. We are all dealing with similar problems. There are several remedy options available. However, they have one thing in common. They are extremely costly.
So you, like cities across Europe and the world, are dealing with the impacts of climate change. What are the most urgent ones that you're seeing in your city?
In Slovenia, we are actually rather lucky as far as climate change is concerned. We are a very green country, lots of woods, enough water, and so on. However, also Slovenia has been hit by climate change. We notice an increased number of heat waves. Temperatures are increasingly high. in the mid of April or start of May, we had temperatures for a few days almost up to 30, which is real summer temperatures. Now we are back to normal weather. Summers are becoming extremely hot. And of course, in urban areas, this is a major problem. Old town of Celje is medieval, so there are hardly any trees there. And in summer months, it is becoming unbearable to actually walk the streets of the city.
Can you describe this heat from a personal perspective and how you manage it?
I wonder whether I'm walking the streets of Arab Peninsula or whether I'm walking the streets of my hometown. Celje is rather green, lots of trees. The old city center is actually on the side of the river bank. We have a large park. We have lots of trees along the river. So if a population keeps away from staying out in the heat, we are okay.
Gotcha.
With smart behavior, one can stay away from being exposed to this extreme heat. But of course, for the population that needs to drive to work and so on, that is difficult. But I guess, yeah, not different than anywhere else in the world or in the areas that have similar climate to ours. Celje is actually 50 kilometers away from a smaller range of alpine mountains, lots of trees, mountains, and so on. So a lot of people actually would drive off into the higher areas where the temperature is more moderate. So leaving Celje at 40 degrees, you can drive up to 1,000 meters above sea level, and you are there at 15 degrees. So a lot of people are doing this.
I remember speaking to, I think it was Grenoble, about rising temperatures, and they were talking about actually some issues arising from this behavior as well. Custodians of the forest and communities in the mountains being upset about being overrun by climate migrants from the local cities. Is that something that you've seen?
It was probably the most visible in the COVID days, when people from urban areas just tried to get out, tried to get into the nature. But nevertheless, Slovenians are historically mountaineers, so that's nothing new. And going out into the hills, into the mountains in the summer, this is an old tradition. But it is probably exercised more frequently and by a larger number of people than in the past, but not a new approach.
Okay, so to be the devil's advocate, what if I said then it sounds like the city is experiencing longer summers and more opportunities to travel to the mountain? It sounds like climate change is a positive for the city rather than a negative.
We have to draw a positive impact out of every crisis, obviously, and that's what we are doing. Yeah, but it's not a joke. It's something very serious. We are addressing it very seriously, systematically. It is not new, trying to decrease carbon footprint, trying to change people's behavior. This is something that has been on our agenda now for several years.
And I assume you also have forecasts that predict a worsening set of effects in the coming years, so you want to be ready as well for that.
Probably 2 or 3 years ago, I read an article predicting that Ljubljana, Slovenian capital, is the city that is going to experience the highest temperature increase. So that was a major wake-up call for me. And I guess we are all pretty much in the same position. However, Celje is a smallish city, as I say, under 50,000 people. We are surrounded by woods. We are a 15-minute city, and a quality of life in a place like that is just incredibly good, even when climate change hits and even with high temperatures. We can adapt, we can adjust, purely because of the environment in which we live.
And that's a nice point as well about the 15-minute city, that what is general good urban planning can be a real benefit when it comes to the specific issue of climate change.
Absolutely. I guess the advantage is Slovenia as a country, as a whole. I call Slovenia a city of 2 million people, because that's what the whole country is. And we have small and medium cities. We have two cities that are over 50,000 people. And that was a major advantage in trying to get through COVID crisis, and it worked really well. So yes, they are mega cities, and we look in awe at them sometimes. But when it comes to quality of life, when it comes to daily work, daily going around, it is the 15-minute cities that always win in my eyes.
We'll come back to speaking about local Slovenia more broadly because of your involvement in this group of municipalities. But maybe to continue on your city for now, I believe that you're engaged a lot in European cohesion policy. Could you just explain briefly for our listeners what cohesion policy is and tell me about how your city has taken part in it?
Yeah, a cohesion policy is an umbrella which tells us in which way we should develop and so on. And to implement strategies, there is European funding available. So it's like a feedback loop. That's what you should be doing. When you do it, you can be funded to implement. So it works very well. I personally am very supportive of it. Also at the forefront in several fields, working strategically, should it be in certain fields, sort of content, but mainly in systemic questions, sort of creating a vehicle, how we bring this funding into the country in an efficient way so that implementation, that the development happens as quickly as it can and as well as it can with as little bureaucratic hurdles as possible. There is still a long way ahead of us. We've come a long way, but there is a long way to go.
So those are the aims of cohesion policy. Can you tell me a little bit more about access to the funding? Is it a large burden to gain access? Is there a lot of cooperation with the national level?
All of the above. It is not easy. In Celje, we have a very good system that was set up, and it pays back every time when you're well organized, when you have systems in place, because we have really decreased all of these overheads that are burdening us. And Celje is a very successful city in EU fund absorption. But it is not as easy as it may seem when we have PR reports, we have gained so and so much money and so many good projects were implemented and so on. Just last month, we had an opening of a major project for the city, 17 million project. We built 142 apartments and additional car parks. So at the end, it is very hard to understand that project was in the making for several years and that will be reporting on absorption of EU funding for several more years.
You mentioned about Celje being a particularly efficient absorber of cohesion funds, and I wanted to see if you have any tips for other municipalities about arranging more efficient absorption.
Our organization is rather atypical. It just depends what suits an organization. I used to work as a business consultant, and I brought this in with me as my baggage, if you like. And I used to focus on efficiencies in large organizations. I used to work for one of the big five consulting companies. And I've just followed the same principles when setting up EU funds environment in our municipality. So the way we are organized is that there is a team that specializes in following calls, preparing documentation, and so on. As soon as the call is out, they automatically inform other co-workers and management what is available. Then we get together, we decide whether a certain call is of interest to us. Project team gets formed, they get specific split of task responsibilities. So it's no tasks overlap. Everyone knows what their job is. They have timelines. some documentation has to get outsourced because of its nature, and we submit. So everyone knows what they have to do, no tasks are doubled, and yeah, when the funding comes through, then the same group of people continues on implementation and reporting. So the EU team does reporting. There are a connection between the outside world, the ministries, and the inside of the organization. And that's about it. That's about it. The thing is that, for example, EU financial terms are so long, they expand over three mayoral terms. In Zalia, we have stability, so it's okay. But in some municipalities, when there are more changes, it is very, very difficult to retain continuity. And continuity is paramount. Otherwise, reporting just does not go through, basically. You just need to have years and years of overview of what is happening if you want to fulfill all of the requirements that come with EU funding. With me formerly working in manufacturing, in the industry myself, I don't see this as a burden. I always make a statement to my colleagues saying, we get millions of euros of EU funding. All we have to do is good paperwork. Imagine what you would need to do in a company to have the bottom line of multi-million euros a year. So this is my message to everyone who works in this, and message of people around the people who work in this. But the constant problem is that people who work in EU funding, they have the toughest job of all. They are accountable for everything they do. Whatever is not correct comes back. Money doesn't get paid out. And this does not apply to other jobs. So high stress, always tight deadlines, always trying to collect all data that is required to submit your proposal, reporting, or whatever. So I would say there is a society of EU funding people throughout Europe. My compliments to what they are doing.
And I like that message as well about having a strong and long-term vision.
There is one thing that I would like to emphasize here. In daily operations, daily tasks always prevail. It's a human nature that we just quickly respond to small things, yeah? And then there is no time for big things. And EU funded projects, it's all strategic, it's all long-term, it's all visionary. And that often gets pushed to the back because daily crises always take most of the time. And this is another strong message for everyone who listens to this.
Great. Yeah, very clear.
But anyway, we focus on the good results and the steps that the city is making in the development and working for our citizens.
Can you give me a couple of other examples about how your city has used cohesion policy to become more resilient and sustainable?
It goes way back to 2004. That was in pre-EU days. The city got the wastewater treatment plant, waste treatment, and so on. So we had two major projects finished that made a big change for the city. And after that, we've been working on continuous improvement, multiple investments throughout the city. And if I focus on two major groups also to build resilience and decrease carbon footprint, in the previous financial period, we hugely focused on improving sustainable mobility. We have improved public transport. We have built kilometers of cycling tracks. We introduced bike sharing and so on and so forth. Also, we have implemented some projects to improve energy efficiencies of public buildings. But in the coming financial period, or in the current financial period, in addition to urban sustainable mobility and energy efficiency, we are opening a new chapter, which is nature-based solutions. And I'm really thrilled and looking forward to the solutions that we will get out of that funding. And to address this new chapter, we had a workshop organized by Covenant of Mayors in Ljubljana a few weeks ago, where several experts were presenting nature-based solutions that cities could use. So something new, but when you think about it, it's not so new, because in traditional farming, that's the way people used to live. With this funding, with the specific name Nature-Based Solutions, by all means, we are really additionally increasing awareness, and money is going to be also invested just in green solutions. Now, admittedly, in all of the projects that we do, there is also the energy efficiency note involved and so on. But here we will now be able to address just green areas, make cities greener, green roofs, and so on.
I'm going to ask for a couple more examples later of this nice nature-based solutions, but I like this philosophy of moving forward to the past.
Yeah. In Celia, we are looking at two areas that we would like to address. Green areas, as I mentioned before, we have a lovely river that is on the brim of our city center and hills on the other side, very green woods. We have city woods there with lots of walking tracks, and we will have a holistic approach looking at this whole green area, which is just on the border of the city center. And then there is another green area a little bit further out, maybe 2 kilometers away from the city center. And we are going to have an overview, a holistic approach of what we could do there, how we could keep these green areas, but actually bring them to the level that make bigger impact, that we can invite our inhabitants there more. So basically, the way we were developing the urban area, we would now like to develop the green areas.
What's a specific example of an idea for a new green infrastructure within the city? Is there anything, for example, to combat the heat island effect that you were mentioning?
We are looking at going green everywhere we can. A green infrastructure, blue infrastructure, but this is not new. In the funding also, it was always eligible to plant trees and so on, and we were doing this as much as we could. Also, we are planting trees for certain celebrations and so on. So this has really come into the awareness of people. People are donating money for planting trees and so on. So I would say, I personally am very pleased with the development. This huge change in awareness seems to have happened in the last 2, 3, 5 years. But it's really rewarding. It's really rewarding. It is visible in the city. Luckily, Celje historically, it was already very green, lots of trees everywhere. But the improvement that we are facing in the urban neighborhoods, in the city and so on, it's really nice. The challenge that we are facing is the old city center, because it's protected under cultural heritage. And here, it is very difficult to try and protect a location under a certain view, in a certain look, from the period where they weren't facing 40 degrees centigrade. Yeah, so it's a bit of a paradox, but with good cooperation with cultural heritage teams and our ideas, so far we have always found solutions, and I'm sure we'll do it this time as well.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That's something actually I've heard from a lot of cities recently. When it comes to cultural heritage, to this heritage area, are there issues, for example, about being able to plant trees there, or types of trees, locating things like solar panels there, and how have you managed to navigate these issues?
No, it is very limited. It is very, very limited. Celje is a partner in a project, Positive, under Horizon 2020. the project is addressing idea of energy positive neighborhoods and buildings. So now we are not talking about energy efficiencies anymore. We are talking about buildings being positive. So how can we use photovoltaics, wind, and other options for creating energy? Celia was invited into the partnership because we are the, so we have this old city center that is under protection. That city, Alkmaar, is a pilot city, and one of the old cities is also Évora in Portugal. So we are now looking at options that could also be used in the old city centers. However, the city center is in Celia is not so large. We are focusing on coming up with solutions for the rest of the city, where we have large public buildings where limitations are hardly any, and so on. So we are focusing on where to make a change, where to introduce photovoltaics to make the biggest change. Also, we are looking at hot spots, at hot areas, obviously large car parks, tar seals, not enough trees. These are the areas that immensely create heat and heat states also at night and so on. So we are aware of that, and now in this financial period we'll be strongly starting to address that. We already have some good examples how, for example, big car parks can be done in a way that they are not sources of heat with trees and so on, but the model just needs to be used elsewhere.
And so when it comes to nature-based solutions, for example, for car parks, etc., tree planting is really the focus. Are there complementary activities to this?
Yes, it is just so that the area, the whole area, shouldn't be tar sealed, so that rainwater actually drips into the dirt rather than just flowing off, flushing everything away, going into pipes. Then it's also areas with grass where all of this excessive water can be collected, so that we don't have overflowing and so on. They are very simple approaches that just need to be used. Yeah. And often it is just so that when planning such areas, there is not enough focus put on that. It is just the way of finding the solution to fit the purpose. It's not just about fitting the purpose, it's about bigger picture.
Got you. And it's interesting because the solutions you're talking about are multifunctional, right? On one hand, they're dealing with high temperatures because they help to reduce the average temperature. But on the other hand, they're also dealing with flooding and high water levels because they create a sponge city effect. So it's a win-win approach.
Exactly, it is. Celia has a history of flooding. It is not happening regularly, but when it happens, it used to be really devastating. So we have spent, or the state has spent big millions on working on flood prevention, and this project is almost finished now. But nevertheless, we still have to work on retaining the water, not just sending it off into the river. We have to find solutions on bringing water into dirt, into smaller ponds and so on, because after a lot of rain there is a lot of heat, and then there is drought, and normally right. There is some hail in between, so that's the package.
Got you. So it's about taking what's scarce and using it for what's plentiful, and vice versa.
Yeah, that's right. And we just need to soften the extremes. The nature is as it is. The climate change is as it is. We caused it. Now we have to live with it and deal with it.
I just love Sasha's energy and enthusiasm. She's clearly a formidable force in the battle against climate change. As the urban heat island effect is something that's plaguing more and more cities these days, it was great to hear about an innovative local approach. It was also heartening to learn that European funding and programs like the Covenant of Mayors really are having an impact at local level. I'm interested in learning more about Sasha's role in integrated territorial investment, which is a group of Slovenian cities banding together to secure European projects for sustainability and well-being, among other things. City employees tend to have pretty heavy workloads. So what is the cost benefit on national and international collaboration, and what's the secret sauce, the winning formula, for working on these levels? All that and more in part two. Here we go.
So a role of yours that we mentioned earlier is president of the Expert Committee for Integrated Territorial Investment, the intermediate body association of urban municipalities of Slovenia. Could you tell us a little bit more about this work in the Integrated Territorial Investment Committee?
Yeah, this is something very interesting that happened in the previous financial period. Integrated territorial investment is something new that European Commission launched as a bit of a pilot. So we were there. Slovenia decided that we're going to adopt that mechanism for urban development. No one knew what we should be doing. No one knew how it should be done or whatever. So we just started from scratch. And in 2016, there was a tiny group of like-minded people. We sort of got together. We were pushing for starting of fund absorption and so on. And with our enthusiasm, knowledge, experience on the urban municipality side and our partnership way of working, we got really strong partners on ministry sides as well. So that was the start of Slovenian ITI. And ITI is funding, is providing money for urban development for urban municipalities in Slovenia. And at the end of financial period, ITI Slovenia has become EU-based practice, noticed in the European Commission Handbook of Urban of Sustainable Development. The fields in which we worked before and fields that we work now to support adaptation, because that's why we are having this discussion, and that's what Covenant of Mayors is all about. In the financial period 2014-2020, in ITI, we had financing for urban development, which means to increase density of construction in urban centers rather than building on farmland. Then we had financing for sustainable mobility and energy efficiency. In 2021-27, we will continue with urban development. We will continue with sustainable mobility, and the new area is new nature-based solutions. So it is great. 139 million euros of EU and state funding, just under 100 projects that are going to be or are already implemented. Extremely good partnership between urban municipalities and very good cooperation with ministries which were involved in the ITI. I laugh at it. I say that was a hobby program, because the expert committee people, we do this as a hobby, as fun, on top of the job where we are actually working, our roles. But it is all about people. It is all about people, and we are not co-workers. We don't do this because we have to do it. I just call it, it's a lifestyle, right? And the exchange of information, the exchange of problems that we are facing, challenges we are facing, how to get around that. It just works incredibly well. But this is something that just can't be made. It can't be made. It can't be prescribed. It just happens when people who are willing to do it actually roll up their sleeves and go and do it. I've been giving several speeches on this, and the bottom line, I guess, is that we were so successful because each of us was representing our own needs, needs of our cities where we live. For example, I laugh when we have ministers and so on visiting our city, and I say, everywhere you walk on EU money. And it's true, but that's where I live, yeah? And the environment where I live has improved so much over the last decades that it's just incredible. Where we look at old photographs or where we write reports of what we have achieved, it's hard to believe, but it's done. It's done. And as I said, the work, the type of work with EU funding is extremely demanding. It's not for everyone, but people who survive it, they are fantastic colleagues. They know how things should be done. They try to find solutions. And yeah, it's great. Also, when we talk about knowledge projects throughout Europe, it just seems that there is a population of Europe as people who move in this environment, because it's really nice that after I met someone in a project 10 years ago, then we surface again at an event or on a different project. So it seems to be a bit of a subculture of Europe these days.
Brilliant. And could you paint that picture for me a little bit more concretely? You said that thinking about the city 10 years ago or so, you would, or more, you would hardly recognize it. I mean, what was, can you give me a sort of a concrete picture of some of the details that someone might notice, a visitor to the city after a long period?
I lived abroad for 4 years in the time when things started happening in Celje. We have this medieval castle that used to be the Count's castle, and that used to be a ruin. Some work started to be done on that, but it was not EU funding. 4 years later, when I came back home, it was like, what's this? What's this? And I just, something was wrong, but I couldn't pinpoint it. Yeah. So EU funding we used for much more work on the castle, which is now a very strong tourist spot, has a place for events and so on, has a cafe, has performances and so on. Then the old city center, it was all repaved. While repaving, there were excavations made. Fantastic Roman ruins were excavated, huge villas, and that is now preserved, sort of rebuilt, so that when you walk through the city, you see the walls of the villas, and that was changed into benches. New trees were built, new areas for restaurants and bars to broaden their gardens was created. Then, as I said, several kilometers of cycling tracks. In the outskirts of Celje, there is also an artificial lake, which was created decades ago to provide industrial waters. That area was all green, but it wasn't used. People wanted to use the nature there. So the walking tracks around the lake were built, and so on and so forth. Also, with the way society evolves, people spend more time and energy trying to stay fit, go into the nature and so on. So through EU funding, we have created additional infrastructure so that people could actually use these fantastic green spaces that we have in our town.
Wow. Okay. So it's like a very thorough transformation. And I like this theme coming up again. You're sort of to future sustainability and resilience via medieval castles and Roman Empire. So great future and past collage there as well.
Yeah, it is. It is. And we would really like to build on this in the future. It just goes, you know, like in Maslow's pyramid, how you satisfy your needs. So the city has come to the level that now we can do some extras, like doing up all of these green areas, presenting Roman heritage much better and so on. A lot of work was already done on presentation of medieval heritage because of its extreme importance and so on. We have really good museums. A lot of funding was already invested there. For example, in the museum, we have a Roman road, which is actually 4 meters under the current level of the roads because of the river sediments. so that Roman Road is now part of the museum. You can walk on it. It is just incredible. So anyway, let me use this as an invite to tell you.
You just mentioned such an enormous slew of projects. I wonder if you could share with me from your experience and from Celia's experience with these projects, some insider tips on what you have found to be really important in terms of bringing these projects through to success and fruition. And also if you could candidly share with us any challenges you faced or maybe things that you weren't able to do what you had hoped you would achieve and lessons that you took from that.
In Italia, it is just standard that there is always more needs than there is funding. It is really important to prioritize. It is really important to start with big projects and then move to smaller projects. We are facing challenges all the time, but facing challenges, I just take it as a game. We have challenges, we have to overcome the burdens, and then at the end we come of it happy and we say, yes, we made it. And we are moving on to the next challenge. Lots of challenges, for example, in Celia, it is very difficult to develop because of archaeological remains. Every time we start digging, the time for excavations, in case some remains are there, the investment just gets prolonged by months or years. The cost of excavation is part of the investment. So this, despite the fact that we are very proud of our heritage, it is a bit of difficulty when we try to develop. So we are doing our best to actually present the cultural heritage, but we have to work around it. Then as we discussed before, there is other cultural heritage protection in the city, in the park, and so on. But that's fine. That's fine. We are proud of our heritage. It is just often the discussion between involved parties, stakeholders. I guess what we are advocating for is that times have moved on. There are new materials. There are new ways of doing things. We are trying to find the middle way, let's say. We're trying to find the middle way so that the looks are right, but sometimes we just have to move ahead to make our investments, our projects fit for today's life.
Just imagining every time you kind of put the shovel to the ground that you're praying that you're not going to find another skeleton.
Yeah. Let me just share an anecdote. My family, we actually live at the riverfront at the park. And on the inner side, there was new paving made and obviously all excavations. And two villas were found. And looking out of my kitchen window into the Roman villa kitchen, all I would need to do was take a mop and go down and mop the floor and start cooking there. That's how well it was preserved. So this is just something that is just amazing. It is just amazing.
So if you have to have a curse, it's a pretty good one to have.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is.
So back to the integrated territorial investment.
Yeah.
You were already talking about how much work is involved in the day-to-day running of the municipality. What if I say, as a city, I'm not convinced of this integrated approach because I have already got so much to deal with and so stretched resources that I can't spend my time going and chatting to other municipalities about their problems as well?
Yeah. Together, we are stronger. Together, we know more. Together, we get synergies. Yes, it is commonly a problem. We don't have time to do this. The fact is that we are representing ourselves. And again, that's why we are good. Because when I go into a meeting, I represent our needs and I'm going to fight for them. If it's a job, I will not necessarily fight as much as I do when I'm representing ideas of how we should get ahead. So our team is actually in a little bit of a difficult situation. As you mentioned, or as you could conclude, obviously our daily jobs are extremely demanding. This additional responsibility running a mechanism for 139 million euros in the previous financial period, which is going to be 177 million in this financial period. This is not to be sneezed at. Admittedly, ZMOS is an intermediate body for the first level of approval of projects. The nature of ITI is such that it's bottom-up, so cities propose which investments they want to implement, and then it's the committee of mayors that approves those projects. And once they are approved, only then are they entitled to run for money, and only then are the projects fully planned and submitted to the ministerial intermediate bodies. It is not a sustainable setup, I can tell you that much. It's not sustainable at the personal level, because this is an additional job on top. But if we established an organization where people would be doing this as a job, then the edge will be taken off. But here I need to admit that the intermediate body is split in two parts. ZMOS does the administrative support, communication, and so on. All of the paperwork is with them. And the expert committee does all of the strategic work, content, and so on. But we are a team. It all goes hand in hand. We work together as one, right? I'm just trying to point out that, yes, there are people employed who do the actual day-to-day work, but the expert committee, we do this for fun, challenge, higher goals, if you like. And we make sure we don't see our families very much and we don't go home very much. So, but we are very proud at the end with what we have achieved. Yeah, yeah. A bit of a joke, but there is always some truth in the jokes.
Of course, understood.
Yeah. Plus, I would like to mention another thing. It's not only that we completed 136 million job of spreading the money throughout urban municipalities. Also, as a consortium of urban municipalities, we were selected into Intelligent Cities Challenge. Then three of our urban municipalities have joined EU Mission for Climate Neutral and Smart European Cities 2030. So out of this ITI platform, so many additional good outcomes have come. We also participated in preparation of a Ljubljana agreement, which is part of urban agenda documents. And that document gave rise to importance of small and medium cities in Europe. So huge impact way outside the municipalities and much broader than ITI in Slovenia, and obviously much broader than Slovenia. So when we bring all of that into the equation, it was really worth it. It is worth it, and it's going to be worth it. And now we have a very dense, hardworking time, even more difficult than before. We are at the start of the financial period, setting up everything, writing all of the procedures and so on, and at the same time finishing off all of the projects and the mechanism for the previous period. But hey, we'll make it.
So even if your family don't get to see you directly, they can see you within all the improvements to the city and the country.
I'm a very systemic person. So the same as my team in Celje runs on set procedures when I'm not here, the family runs on set procedures when I'm not there either. But that made my children very independent. And yeah, there is a benefit out of each way you do it.
You mentioned international city collaboration, and we've been talking about national city collaboration. Could you tell me a little bit about what you see as the relative benefits of each approach?
International is just paramount, yeah. For me, the benchmarking is always critical. When sitting at home, we can just praise ourselves, right? But for me, it's very important that we see where we rank on a bigger scale. So I was always advocating for international involvement participation in projects. It is also very good because when working with other people, we can see we really excel and we are not even aware of that. Yeah. And obviously, there are always areas of improvement. And for that, I like to see best practices elsewhere and see what can be used in Celje. For example, we were on a sugar project, which was a very big project addressing transport. Pilot cities were Athens, London, Barcelona, and Paris. We were follow cities. And from that, I have drawn conclusion that if Paris, London, Athens, and Barcelona can make it in transport, surely Celje can. Yeah. Even though we are not directly comparable, but they have solutions because the money that they can invest in solutions just obviously is a completely different ballpark figure. But it's just important to see that when you are moving millions of people around and it all works, surely on a much smaller scale, we can make it work as well. So this is the message that I like to always emphasize. If bigger can make it, so can we. Then about cooperation within the country, it is just so that we cooperate with our neighboring municipalities, but it's not common that we would participate in events or work in partnerships with municipalities in other parts of the country. So I had personally a much stronger network outside the country than inside the country. And ITI made this change. It made this change that we built an extremely strong network within the country, within urban municipalities. And it's not just the expert team, it is also the political team. The mayors, they have regular committees, expert committee reports to our achievements, results, conclusions, suggestions. So again, two pillars, expert and political. And I am very proud of this environment because over the last several years that we started working together on ITI, we've had different opinions, but we always left the round table with the consensus plans, how to tackle problems, how to talk to ministries, ministers, what to suggest, and so on. So all in all, a really good experience and a really good model that has worked so well for us. And I believe it's going to work for us well in the future as well.
I remember you speaking earlier about the importance of a stable political vision for these projects, and you're lucky in that regard. But I suppose that a big advantage of this cooperation on the political level would also be creating a greater political consensus around these goals.
Yes, European cohesion policy is extremely complex and it's very complicated and it's not easy to understand because it is very easy to take a very simplistic view. There is money, I'll get money, I'll use it for something. Yeah, it doesn't work in a simple way. So also when there is a political change, for the new mayor to understand how things work, it is not always easy. Also, we've had examples when there was political change and the previous teams were preparing projects and the new teams didn't choose not to implement them and so on. That can cause distractions, but everything happens for a reason. So I guess it is very important that we somehow create an environment to create continuity so that there are no disruptions. Different opinions, different ways of doing things, that's all fine. And if we do things in a different way, we learn from each other. And at the end, the results are better.
Fantastic. I think that that's really covered just about everything. It's been very, very dense with information, this chat, which is fantastic. And you've offered a lot of specific insights that could be used for other cities. Maybe you could end by sharing with us sort of a more general piece of advice that you would offer to other European municipalities engaged in this kind of initiative.
It starts with creating a good team, good stakeholders, group of stakeholders, that is willing to contribute, that is innovative, that is creative, come up with ideas, come up with strategy, come up with vision, then start working on creating projects, creating tangible ideas, check with EU funding, where money will be available, when money will be available, start working on planning of projects, and when money becomes available, run, apply, get money, implement, and create a fantastic event at the opening.
Great. Sasha, thank you so much for all the insights today. It's been really a pleasure speaking.
Yeah, it was great.
That's it for this episode of the Covenant of Mayors podcast. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. For other episodes and full transcripts, please check out eu-mayors.ec.europa.eu.